jungle of death. Women, at least she-demons.
Podcasting on all frequencies from the jungle of death, you're listening to Babes in the Woods. Hello! This is Babes in the Woods. Thank you for coming into the jungle of death once again. Today we're going to be discussing some amazing, amazing robot business with some Pacific Rim. And this is just a little shout out to Miss Lindsay, but our powers combined is all I want to say, but that's not true. Lindsay, you just do it.
Wrong show.
Together as Voltron, we are Babes in the Woods.
There you go.
I was also going to say that we are robots in disguise.
Well, we are more than meets the eye.
We are more than meets the eye. I think that's very true.
Do you guys remember that McSweeney's article where it was like about Optimus Prime running for president and it was like an attack ad on Optimus Prime and it was like, Mr. Prime, are you a robot or are you a truck?
And it was about flip-flopping.
Anyway, that was the time that was had.
That sounds perfect.
That sounds amazing.
It was a really good time.
I would vote for Optimus Prime.
Who wouldn't vote for Optimus Prime? Let's be honest.
Decepticons.
Well, that's true, but Decepticons are lame.
As we know, though, this nation is 50% Decepticons.
True story.
We are
also
fucked.
I'm not convinced that the Dinobots are smart enough to vote for anybody.
They can't operate a polling booth?
They're not very smart.
That's true, but I'm just saying that it's not that hard, really, to push it. Oh, Chad! That's where the hanging Chad's gonna come in. Totally.
Exactly.
We'll bust them in,
yeah.
And we'll just, you know, do voter education, and it'll be okay. We'll get the Dinobots where they need to be in terms of the votes.
Okay.
Very true. All right, well,
I support this plan.
I mean, we're talking about Dinobots, we're talking about robots. Why don't we kick off, we're going to list our favorite robots, I think. Or if anybody has a very specific robot.
100% the Iron Giant.
That's what I was going to say, too. That was absolutely my choice.
Iron Giant. So yesterday when I was cleaning my house, I was like, where's my fucking Rosie? I just want a sassy robot. And then I was like, Roomba is kind of Rosie, but Roomba is not Rosie.
Roomba's it's not, true. If once Roombas start talking, they'll be more Rosie-like, but I think that there's going to be a lot more cursing from Roombas.
Ha! Yeah.
I believe that.
They're much sassier and not in a clever way.
That's true.
Those videos where, like, cats are on top of Roombas are kind of moving closer to Rosie.
That's true. Oh, man. A cat-piloted Roomba.
Well, I imagine Roombas having the personality of a cat. I guess that's just my assessment of those.
A somewhat brain-damaged cat, I think, because they always run into the wall.
Well, to be fair, I mean, yeah, I guess that's true. I was going to say that their main wiring probably doesn't allow them really to circumnavigate a wall of
like,
some kind.
Like a brain-damaged cat.
Much like a brain-damaged cat, yes.
Well, but they also attack your feet.
That's true.
Like yes. A cat that has its, you know, brains about it.
Anybody from the ASPCA who wants to send angry letters to the Babes in the Woods.
Please find us at this address.
We gotta watch out. PETA's gonna start, like, just throwing cats at us.
Oh my gracious. Well, better than throwing them in the dumpster.
I'll just start sneezing and wheezing. Nobody wants that. Nissa, do you have a favorite robot?
I don't know if I have a particular favorite robot.
Well, name some of your favorites, then.
I didn't realize until
BMO.
This past year that
BMO.
BMO might be my favorite robot.
Which one's BMO
or
again?
Mo from WALL-E.
He's on Adventure Time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course. Oh, WALL-E is so hard to say no to.
Right? And
yeah.
Like, Mo is my favorite robot on
Mo
WALL-E.
Mo is pretty great.
He's the best
WALL-E.
One. Yeah, and like most of the Transformers, not all of them, not Starscream. He sucks. And yeah, I didn't realize I was pro-robot until recently, but it turns out I've always been pro-robot. And like,
I like the idea that you could be pro or anti-robot. That really makes me happy.
Well, some people
there are two kinds
just don't
of people.
Enjoy robots enough.
People don't like robots enough. I feel like robots are underrated at this point. There was like a robot saturation phase, but now I'm back on robots. And that's part of the reason I like to figure them so much.
I read
much.
A thing today about this Russian guy who's trying to actually do the put your brain in a robot body thing.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
And he's, like, trying to encourage billionaires to invest in his program so that they can be immortal. And also because he doesn't have the money for this, like, program. I read about it, and, like, the plan is extremely tenuous. It's like, we need to develop this in the next 10 or 15 years, and then we need to develop this after that. And it's all very concept correct, but, you know.
Sounds like greater intelligence.
Extremely conceptual still.
Sounds like me making a life plan in outline form and then getting stressed out.
You also talked about cryogenically freezing yourself, though, at some point in time. I don't see this happening yet.
Well, what I want to do is be launched into space. Right? Yeah. And then the alien technology kicks in, and then I don't have to worry about shit.
That's very true.
Now, wait a minute. When did the aliens happen?
They're going to happen at some point, and it doesn't matter, because I'm cryogenically frozen.
We've got at least a few more years before first contact. Like, there's a date for it, and I haven't heard of it. Like, what's his name? Zephyrum something or other. He's not even born
yet.
Yeah. Gosh, why can't I think of the name? I feel like I just lost all of my Star Trek cred.
You and me both, but I was just watching Deep Space Nine, so mine's still kind of intact.
Cochrane is the name, I think.
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct.
So, well, speaking of first contact, this is kind of what Pacific Rim has is kind of about.
That's true.
And why don't we start with, do we have a, who wants to do the plot summary? Lindsay, you got this?
Yes.
All
right,
let's do it.
I'm going to tell you right now that mostly I'm going to read from the official synopsis, so it's going to sound really awesome, and I hope you guys are ready for this. When legions of monstrous creatures known as kaiju start rising from the sea, a war began that would take millions of lives and consume humanity's resources for years on end. To combat the giant kaiju, a special weapon is devised. Massive robots called Jaegers. Okay, interjection. Jaegers are proving nearly defenseless in the face of the relentless kaiju. On the verge of defeat, the forces defending mankind have no choice but to turn to two unlikely heroes. A washed-up former pilot and an untested trainee who are teamed to drive humanity, drive a legendary but seemingly obsolete Jaeger from the past. Together, they stand as mankind's last hope against the mounting apocalypse.
Is she really legendary? I feel like I didn't get that impression.
Yeah, dude, she's totally legendary because he, like, dragged her back onto the beach. He's the one pilot, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think there is that, like, and they're, like, trying the whole time in that, like, expositionary phase to show us that, like, the people that drive the Jaegers are, like, superheroes or, like, rock stars. And, like, they're basically, like, collectibles. Like, one of the things I really liked about the movie is the way that it's so clearly designed to make toys.
Yeah.
For little boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, the Chinese pilots are a trio of, like, they're triplets, right?
Yeah.
And they play, like, basketball, and they have a three-armed, like, Jaeger.
Yeah.
And, like, the Russians have their big, ridiculous-looking, like,
with the best helmets
Rocky
on
Jaeger.
The inside.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
They were awesome. Cherno Alpha.
I love them. They
looked
like the children
time.
Of the villain from Rocky, whichever it is.
You're totally right.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we...
But that's the synopsis.
That's the synopsis.
I thought we could fill it in from there.
That sounds
this
great. I mean... In terms of filling it in, basically, all you really need to know is, do we want to talk about let's just talk about the beginning, but the main guy, part of his issue is that while he's linked with another person, he gets...
His brother.
His brother dies, and it traumatizes him.
Deeply.
Their names he was still connected
are,
when...
Right, so he felt it, like, and that sucks a lot.
I cannot pronounce this word. Raleigh Beckett.
Yeah.
Beckett.
Yeah.
And the guy is played by that dude from Sons of Anarchy, which I didn't realize just because I'm so used to seeing him exclusively FX promos.
He's also from...
North of England.
I'm sorry.
Super Geordie.
Are you thinking of the brother or are you thinking of the main character?
The main character.
The main character also was the albino in Cold Mountain.
What?
Yeah. Go back and look.
Oh my god, you're so right. It just freaks me out. That's horrible. Oh god.
Yes,
so
you must know my pain.
You diminished my enjoyment.
Yes.
Oh, I can't even call that to mind because I've only seen that movie once.
Oh, I can.
Anyway, it doesn't matter because the real hotness is those two, like, Australian guys, which the whole time I was watching it, I couldn't stop thinking of Flight of the Conchords because they're such, like, Australians from Flight of the Conchords.
That's true.
Being assholes and punching everyone. So I kept calling
them
Operation Keitha because of that episode where Keitha, like, is, like, Jermaine's girlfriend.
Oh my god.
Like, trimming her toenails on the table and stuff, because that's what I thought of.
Because she's Australian.
Well,
yeah, that's what
we...
Australians are like, right?
Because we're probably going to start getting
into... Hi, Australian podcast listener.
Please send your angry letters, too.
But also, you have black milk, so that's all right.
Yeah. That is...
And shrimp on the Bobby.
That's racist.
Is it racist? Is it racist?
I don't
or is
know.
It a stereotype?
Is there a difference?
Yes.
I'm probably racist. About Australia.
On that note, why don't we take a small break? We'll come back with talking about some anime and some of our reactions, which I think is going to prove to be a very interesting portion. So we'll see you guys here in a little bit. And welcome back to Babes in the Woods. We are here with Nyssa and Lindsay. And
yo.
Say hello, ladies.
Hey.
And we're discussing Pacific Rim. Okay, we want to talk a little bit about how we noticed quite a few similarities between some of the mecha anime that has been released that's pretty legendary, like Evangelion.
Gundam.
Gundam.
Various Gundams.
Very much. How that kind of compares to the movie and how we thought that pretty much influenced the movie, which I think is pretty
I think that's
clear.
A thing
yeah.
that Del Toro has admitted, that, like, you know, the mecha anime as well as the old kaiju movies and all that stuff, like, all of those were the things that he was trying to bring to children now. Like, and he talks about how it's very much a kid's movie and he wanted to make it a kid's movie on purpose. And, like, it's purposefully not military in any recognizable way and
mm-hmm.
all that stuff. And, yeah, I remember thinking, like, oh, you know, that kaiju looks a lot like an angel from Eva. And, like, you know, just the whole idea is obviously extremely Gundam. But
yeah, I think
yeah.
the character of Makamori, too, is so clearly, like, in the Rey archetype.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, you have the, like, trainee.
Yeah.
And, like, at first I was really afraid that they were going to introduce, like, I don't know why, but, like... The character of Rey in Evangelion is one of those ones that just, like, I find so upsetting, I think, because of the final scene in Evangelion where we see all the little Reys
yeah.
and, like, the
yeah.
2Bs being, like, flushed away.
Right.
Like, turds. And I find it really visually upsetting. So I was really afraid that they were going to have clones, but instead she was just untested but awesome, and I really liked
and
that. And I also really liked that she was played by the girl that's the Whisperer from Pitch Perfect.
Was that her?
Yeah,
I'm trying
so.
To figure out
anyway,
where I've seen her before.
Let me just double check that, because I've got IMDb pulled up so that I can call people by their real names.
That's a
very
good call.
Right? It's so helpful.
I was very much, it did feel very much like a live action anime.
It did,
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like.
Maybe not.
Not
oh my
worst,
gosh, no, I'm so bummed.
Not in
different
a like,
person.
Super predictable,
I'm sorry
and terrible way.
For,
like,
I don't think that. Yeah. I will credit you, girl from Pitch Perfect, because I think you're so awesome at some point. but yeah, this girl was in Norwegian Wood, which I watched recently and bummed me out.
Oh, I didn't
was
watch that.
Just because because the story, which is pretty bum out, or is it just because the movie's not that great?
Both.
Okay.
The movie is really visually interesting and, like, I think really well done, but it's a huge visual bummer. Like, there are lots of scenes of, like, small human forms against vast wildernesses.
Oh, wow.
That just make you feel stressed out.
Yeah.
If you're me and afraid of giant open expanses after years of city living.
So you're not a fan of the Hudson School of Painting?
No! No, not at all. Like a horror movie.
The whole romantic period is just a no-go for you. All right.
Yeah, yeah, let's talk about it. Let's talk about Lindsay's art criticisms and how they're strongly linked to visceral, like, neurotic reactions.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, also in terms of, like, the anime, I feel like there were lots of the interactions, like the goofy scientist duo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Felt very much.
Very much.
The dog felt like, you know, like you've got this, like, silly bulldog
mm-hmm.
running
yeah.
through as a visual gag. That felt very anime to me.
I think you're right. Like, a lot of the characters and the ways they interacted were very, like, stock from various
the Hannibal
series.
Chow character also
right.
felt
oh,
like
yeah,
nearly,
definitely.
Oh my god, he was lifted straight out of something.
It
I'm
did
sure
definitely make
like,
me wish that if they'd ever done a live action Cowboy Bebop, that Guillermo del Toro could direct it, because I feel
oh,
like it would
oh
be
my god
really
amazing
successful.
That'd be super great.
He did such a good job with this, like,
yeah.
and as much as it was a lightweight movie, like, I think that the idea that it was for children in some ways explains that, and mm-hmm. I think it also explains in some ways why I responded to it so
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
After, like,
oh man, can
so many,
you
like,
imagine
gritty superhero takes?
Right, if they tried to make this a movie for adults, like a serious, you know, monsters versus robots movie,
well,
I would have hated it.
Here's the thing that, and this is, maybe this moves into our next section, which is our reactions to the movie, but this has been something, and I don't know whether or not my reaction to this movie is fairly genuine. The problem is that I saw it after a lot of people had already seen it. It was hyped up, and it was billed on a lot of websites, including IO9, as being an adult, like, thinking man's action movie. And so when I went to go see it, I was really underwhelmed because the main characters, if they'd made the movie about anyone else other than Raleigh, I would have loved this movie so much. But he was such a blank canvas with no emotions and no real... and I don't think it's the actor. I think he was kind of written as this very bland
yeah.
character. He has
well,
no personality.
Well, like an anime hero. Like, they,
yeah,
you know,
I guess so.
Insert
that's,
your personality here.
That's kind of one of those things, though, where it's like, this is a way to, there's a chance to improve upon that archetype.
Yeah.
And I kept waiting for him to make, like, smart-ass remarks. Like, I'm really used to, and I mean, granted, I've been conditioned by years of Die Hard and however, I mean, Han Solo's and Indiana Jones's. to really anticipate some smart-ass remarks, but I really missed them because there were moments that felt a little too serious to me.
Well, especially since he'd been so cocky in that first scene.
Yeah, I love that he was...
Like,
I love the beginning of the
he
movie.
He was really sassy, and then suddenly he wasn't. Which, I mean, I guess
well,
is
I think,
part of how they
yeah.
portrayed the trauma.
Yeah.
But, like, they really didn't
yeah.
discuss it enough
they don't
to
do,
make
they don't
clear.
Do, but as, in general, there's not a lot of very good character development in the
no.
film. I would
which,
argue.
Which I think
like,
is
you have,
fine.
Like,
yeah.
You get feelings from things. Like, you get feelings like, you get Idris Elba's, his character has a ridiculous name. Hang on, I'm going to tell you guys it. Because he's probably not
Pentecost.
Stacker Pentecost.
I do want to make out with
okay.
his face more and more every
he's
time.
Dying,
every
right,
time.
He's dying of radiation poisoning slowly because
mm-hmm.
of the generation of Jaeger that he piloted by himself.
Right.
So there's all of this backstory stuff where if you're, like, thinking it in your head
mm-hmm.
as a geek girl, you get excited about it. You're like,
right.
oh, sexy backstory.
Yeah.
But then there's so little actual story during the movie for any of these guys
mm-hmm.
that you don't necessarily get that side.
Right.
But I would say that for me, that side where I was, like, a little critical or a little disappointed was lost in sort of the unabashed joyfulness of the movie. And also...
Yeah.
I would say this year in particular, I've become very aware of the fact that we're seeing much more like team superhero movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really like the aspect of Drift where you have to team up.
Yeah.
And where
really
you have to team well and you
no
have to be willing to compromise. I thought that was a really, I think it's a wonderful sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Theme
yeah.
to have running
yeah.
through any action movie.
Well, I think it's fantastic, and I really like the idea of Drift. Like, I was a little annoyed because, of course, it's the girl who gets too emotional and can't operate the machinery.
He went wrong.
Yeah, I got annoyed by that, too.
He did, but they
yeah.
showed, all they showed him do was kind of, like, semi lose it. And
right,
then
he had a flashback and then was, like, fine. But,
but I did love being in her memory of that, and I think as an exposition device, that was really great. I think watching it and kind of learning so much more about Idris Elba's character in that moment, and... Like, I think that worked really well. Having him interact with her as a child worked
yeah.
really well. I just wish there'd been a little bit more of stuff like that. I do feel like all the other Jaeger pilots died before we really got to know them.
Yeah.
And we didn't even
yeah.
have, like, a moment, like, in a lunchroom where they were all kind of being, like, you know, the Russians didn't, like, say something or the triplets
yeah, that was
didn't
my
make a comment.
Biggest disappointment was that we
yeah.
didn't spend more time with the other teams or even the other, you know, Jaegers generally. Like, you pretty much... You've seen them once in the, like, this is Shatterdome moment, and then suddenly, like...
Oh my god, Shatterdome is my favorite word.
Isn't it fantastic? I was so excited when that was the name of it. I was like, are you kidding me? This is the best.
I freaked out. I started screaming, two robots enter, one robot leaves.
You're wrong, though.
Anyway,
four robots enter,
like,
one
out.
Robot leave.
Yeah.
Well, two robots. I guess. Well, no robots leave. Well, they leave, but they never come back. But yeah, I was really disappointed that, like, oh, suddenly Cherno Alpha and Crimson Typhoon are conveniently dead. Like, what? I barely even knew what their names were. I had to look it up afterward. Like, Crimson Typhoon was easy, but Cherno Alpha was.
Because they have such exciting outlines. Like, we get the vaguest outline of what their characters are like, right? Like, we get these shiny, giant robots and these crazy outfits, this amazing hair on these Russians, and their giant, ridiculous, Soviet-looking robot.
Right.
And then we have them for, like, all of 10 minutes.
Right, and we get to hear that, like, their wall was unbreached for 6 years, and, like, that's pretty fucking baller.
Yeah, pretty baller,
and, and then, like, oh, we don't care anymore. Like, oh, and they're drowned. But that's, like
I loved those throwaway sentences, those throwaway bits where they were, like, and they did this, and they did that.
Yeah.
And there's, like, these guys were badass, but these guys are even more badass. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's
like,
about that.
You think you're cool.
It was really satisfying to, like, the 12-year-old inside of me.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And I love the scientist. I love Charlie Day. I love him so much in this movie.
I spent half the movie trying to convince myself, J.J. Abrams doesn't act. Like, I couldn't figure out who he was. Like...
No, yeah, no. I loved his kaiju tattoos. I was freaking out about them.
Yeah,
I
was like all excited about them.
I loved his frenemy, the British guy with all his stats.
Mr. Kish from The Hour. Sorry, I love him.
Yeah, so they have to drift, and I think that's a really wonderful heroic scene.
Yeah.
Sort of strung in.
And
I love that Hannibal Chow makes it out alive. I love his boots.
Right.
I would say all the actors in this, though underutilized, were kind of, besides, I don't know, I don't know if the Sons of Anarchy guy didn't have much to work with.
No.
But I would say all the actors do a really good job, like,
with what they have.
Swaggering to the material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like how the scientists, when you have Charlie Day's character, you start to, and even with Ron Perlman's character, you really start to see, like, a subculture that sprung up about the kaiju, which I think is really awesome. And particularly because are they in Tokyo? Where are they at when they're
in Hong Kong.
They're in Hong Kong. Which is kind of where you'd expect, which sounds terribly stereotypical, but, when you look at, like, Hong Kong or Tokyo are kind of very big, Asian cities that have had a big Western influence, you just see a lot of, I feel like, those trends kind of popping up.
Well, and I liked that they showed, you know, however briefly, that, like, people had different reactions to the kaiju, like, the people who had made a shrine out of its body, and, like, how, yeah, the, what's his name, the... Charlie Day's scientist.
Hannibal Chow?
No, Newt.
Hang on.
Oh, yeah.
He had this tattoo, but he was still, like, he was both pro and anti-kaiju, because, like, he thought they were really fascinating, but was still actively working to defeat them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I he was clearly the kaiju hipster.
Like, yeah.
He liked them because it was unpopular to like them.
Gottlieb
and then suddenly,
his, like, suspenders and tweed were so offended.
Gottlieb's amazing, though.
And his math.
I kind of loved
his Gottlieb. Adorable math.
Because he was so
curmudgeonly. Adorable math on a chalkboard.
Yes.
And that actor.
He was so analog.
His name,
like,
I can't remember.
He was wonderful.
But he always plays a very kind of stiff person. Like, he was in Spies
Burr Warsaw. Gorman is his name.
Yes. And
that's a crazy name.
It's an insane name. But he is always playing this very stiff kind of straight man, and so I love that he was so goofy. So it's, like, still the same type of character, but very, like, wild gesticulations and kind of crazy and, like, very high strung, and he's usually, like, the cold fish in the room. So that was really cool. I really like that.
Right.
Well, what did we think about, is it Maiko?
Mako.
How do we feel about Mako as being kind of the only real female character we get?
Well, at least she wasn't, you know, in a love triangle.
She was in a love story.
Kind of. Well, Guillermo del Toro seems convinced that there is no love story in this movie. I have read several quotes by him that, you know, he, like, very consciously didn't put a love story in. And as I think we discussed earlier, just because they don't actually kiss doesn't mean you didn't put a kiss in the movie.
Her crying over his body is enough to make it a love story. I feel like that's kind of the problem.
It could have been.
I don't know. Because
it could have
just
been
platonic. Of drift, and because of the aspect of friendship and, like, the aspect of, like, camaraderie and, like, wartime.
And
feeling,
I think that's what they
wanted.
I think you can
read it either way. Like, honestly, when I first watched it, I was annoyed, and I was like, I don't like that. Like, now they're like, now we think about the future.
Right.
But then
that line was
it,
what made it a love story to me, and that's the one I wanted them to take.
Yeah,
out.
Exactly.
Everything else would have been fine, but if he hadn't said, I never thought about the future till now. I never did have very good timing.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you. You just made it a love story. Like, get out of here.
But I can't. I can't tell. I can't tell. You know, maybe we're reading that as, like, cynical ladies that have seen one too many romantic endings. What if he's just saying, like, you know, like, you and I are finished with this grand endeavor and now we get to, like, live in peace?
I don't think so, though, and the only reason why I say that is
because
probably
the intention, but that's not how it read to me.
Well, I was going
to
say,
I don't think it didn't ring that way to me either, but I'm just, you know, like, playing the devil's advocate if this is what Guillermo del Toro is saying.
Well, I think you're right. I think that's what they think is, you know, like, well, that was their intention anyway.
There's also, there's a certain amount of, like, screenwriter shorthand that happens. Like, I mean, if you're looking at anything when you're writing a movie, every line has to have a certain level of importance for character, relationships, or plot. Like, that's what it always has to do. And so if you look at it like that, that there's almost no other reading you can really give it. Because there's no... She hasn't... None of them have talked about the future, ever. And so it would be one thing if it had been mentioned at some point in time and they
right, like,
kind of...
what are we going to do after we succeed in this, you know, great venture? Yeah. Like, no, but nobody said that. Like, that's
even
not
kind
what
of in
means.
That, like, Warm Bodies kind of way where they... Yeah. Not to bring that movie up again, but just in that kind of way, the wild daydreaming that they kind of did in that, and that sense of what is... Like the crazy things you could dream up, like, if this hadn't happened, where would you have been? Like, that's kind of a definite conversation you can imagine happening in that world.
Right. Or, like, that could have been the topic in that lunchroom scene that we wish we had, you know, where all of the different teams talk about, like, well, what did you used to do? Or, like, you know, what would you be doing otherwise? Like,
and it might give us a little bit more, because the characters I really liked that I kind of wish we'd gotten more of were the Australians. I love the Australians.
Australian dad was the best.
And even Australian son, like, by
Australian son sucked.
Well, by the end, though, like, their relationship... I disagree. Their relationship by the end really made me so interested in them, and, like, because he clearly actually cares about his dad. He's not being so flippant. Like, he has things he cares about. He is able to make the same sacrifices. He knows he's going to die, and yet he doesn't care. He knows that it needs to get done. And I like that because in a lot of movies, that character would be the coward. It would not be the person who goes out and makes... So I was like, that makes him a very interesting character.
But I'm also really sick of, like, you know...
Asshole turned good.
Yeah, right? Yeah. This crappy person gets redeemed by one, you know, final sacrificial act, and he doesn't actually have to care about the consequences because he's dead. Like... Spoilers?
That's an interesting point too, Nissa. I don't know. I was ambivalent towards the Australians. My key overriding feeling of them was that I was creeped out by the idea of a father and son drifting.
Yeah,
like,
it's weird.
The last person I want in my head is my mom.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to, like, pilot a robot with her.
Yeah.
Well, your mom is
love
uniquely
mom.
Scary also. We also love you.
Sounds horrible.
Yeah, no, I
right. Like, what if, like, you know, like, you're drifting. You have perfect, like, understanding of each other. Like, to me, like, the brothers thing makes sense in that. The, like, siblings thing.
Yeah,
like the friendship. Like,
maybe it's
being
different for boys
thing.
And dads. Like,
yeah, I feel like it's a little different for.
But
for
I
most
absolutely
men I know.
Like. I love my parents, but I wouldn't let either one of them in my brain.
I'm a sucker though for father-son stories, so I guess I kind of like that aspect, and I think. I wish they got more of the development that I wish the main character had gotten with his brother, because
they had that sad scene.
Well, and we don't really see him grieve. Like, we see him because it's in the middle of battle and because it's this immediate...
Right, and then he falls over and suddenly it's 5 years later.
Yeah.
Or six or seven or whatever it is.
And he's building a wall.
Yeah.
The wall is the dumbest thing.
The wall is the stupidest thing.
Right, and, like, I get that they had to show us that this is what they're trying to do instead, even though they don't really adequately explain why they think that'll work.
I do really like, though, the idea
of... we just skipped
over,
the entire grieving period. Like,
I like the idea of that Idris Elba's character has to go rogue in order to protect humanity.
Yeah. Right? I love that he did that. Because he was so, like... He was so upright, and as he describes himself, he was such a fixed point that, like... I was surprised, legitimately, when he said, you know, we don't need him, like, we're going to keep doing this anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't expect him to be a rebellious type.
Idris Elba, can we just talk about how amazing he is and how his relationship with Mako was really great, actually. I really liked
it. It was beautiful. It was maybe the best done, really. I would argue it is.
It was so good.
Yeah.
And he was so good about, like, maintaining Japanese, like... mannerisms that, like, I at least could fully believe that he'd spent enough time in Japan and raising a Japanese girl that, like, you know, he understood that you have to wrap something to give it to somebody, and you have to, like, bow in certain degrees. Like, it was crazy. And, you know, aside from a British black man existing in Japan being enough to cause a riot, it was very believable to me.
It's the future.
I really want him to be the next James Bond so badly.
Oh my God, please.
That'd be the best thing in the world.
I would freak out. Like, I love Daniel Craig, but I kind of just want him to scoot out the seat so I can see Idris Elba in his prime.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a...
I would watch the crap out of that.
And he would just be so badass in that role.
Perfect.
But I do think they did such a good job with his character as well, because they set up his radiation poisoning really well.
Yeah.
They set all of, like, all the foreshadowing for that was there. That was really
beautiful.
And
it wasn't
done.
Like overwhelming. It wasn't like when you see this, you know that something is going to happen. It was like, oh, this
no,
is just
No, I thought you just was really into Altoids the first time.
I thought that
was like,
be
that's an interesting character.
A quirky
point.
Character trait. Right? Yeah.
They're curiously strong, right?
just like him.
This weekend I rewatched The Avengers. And that was the other movie whose influence I felt really heavily in this.
Oh, that's
as well.
I can see that.
Like the team of superheroes coming together and complimenting each other with strengths and weaknesses,
also
fighting it out, and then figuring
monster.
Out that they need to stand together.
Yeah.
And I was, as I was watching it, I was like, I'm so happy that this is like the most influential like superhero movie in recent memory. Like, I'm so happy that this is where it's moving.
Right.
I like the.
And then I watched like Fast Six a few weeks ago, which I know is a ridiculous film to bring up and
Why
stuff. But like, the Fast movies are really fun, and they're also similarly about teams of people tackling
true.
Problems.
I will be honest,
also
and I haven't
Vin
seen
Diesel.
It, but I've heard that Fast Six was actually a pretty good movie, from what I've heard from other
Fast
people.
Five is better. Fast Six is quite good, and I will tell you this. More diversity in terms
of
the team
than
you see in either the Avengers or this movie.
Yeah,
I
like
believe
you've got
that.
An Israeli lady who's a weapons expert. You've got lots of like Latino folks running around.
Yeah,
more than half the team is not white.
Wow,
I think
and there are like three or four ladies whose names you know.
I've seen three or I think
which
I've seen
passes the Bechdel
the
test,
movies.
Which this movie doesn't.
Yeah, because there's exactly one. No, that's not true. The Russian chick has like one line. So there are two ladies
never mind.
With lines.
Passes.
But they don't talk to one another.
They never talk to each
no.
other.
No. Fails.
Yeah.
And Mako barely ever talks about something that isn't a dude. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
even
about,
by herself. Like.
Yeah. Well, she's an interesting character who I think they could have done a lot with. I just feel like she kind of fell by the wayside.
Right, I think, and I, like, I really enjoy that, you know, Guillermo del Toro intended to give us a strong female who didn't have to be female. Like, she was just going to be a character, not a girl character.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the way it came across was just, like, it was still very much the, you know, passing from the protection of one man to the protection of another man.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, she can fight him. We see that. So why doesn't she fight Australian Sun? Like, why did that have to happen?
That would be so awesome.
That
would have
been really
awesome
great.
Switch.
I would have really liked that. Well, and it is kind of refreshing because you look at the movies that have come out. You have Man of Steel, you had After Earth, you had Lone Ranger. They came out this summer. And I do think this movie kind of
is better than all of those.
Well, yeah. It's particularly Lone Ranger. I haven't seen Man of Steel, so I can't say. I know quite a few people actually really liked it. But I know Lois Lane really pissed a bunch of people off because she really.
Amy Adams.
Well, I know I love Amy Adams too, but I guess Lois Lane, again, I'm speaking from not
I haven't
having
seen
it
either.
But
neither have I.
I've only heard this.
Soup sucks.
Not a big Superman fan. That Lois Lane not being as spunky reporter, more being kind of very much all about being in love and being
what?
Like attractive.
No way,
to,
they did that.
That's like not the point.
Lois
of
Lois Lane is like the one redeeming feature of Superman.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Everything
absolutely.
Else
she's
man,
the thing that makes it
period.
Obvious that Superman is like actually a 13-year-old boy because he's like, oh, she's so annoying. Oh, like make her go away. And she's just like being reasonable all the time.
Well, why don't we take a quick break and we'll regain our anger over Lois Lane.
that will
sound good to me.
When we'll come back, why don't we talk about why we think Pacific Rim succeeded or failed more so than any of the other blockbusters this year. So we'll be right back. Welcome back. thanks, listeners, for coming back, getting your gears in motion for our Pacific Rim Robot Spectacular. We're coming back. We're going to actually talk about basically how we think this movie did and how it has the ability, in terms of box office, and how it has the ability to influence other films versus the other blockbusters released this summer. Because this was a pretty blockbuster-filled summer. Yeah.
There were a lot of movies that I expected to make a lot of movies. I'm sorry, a lot of money. I sometimes wonder if Hollywood is paying attention to the fact that, like, most Americans, I don't think, are going to go see every single blockbuster movie. No. Like, are they? There's, like, a volume, there's a glut of it.
Yeah.
That I would argue is a little impractical this summer.
Absolutely. Well, also because, I mean, it has changed. Like, the landscape has changed in terms of what people are willing to pay for a movie and video on demand and all of these things. And I'm a little surprised that they've all kept up with the whole summer thing as opposed to releasing them throughout the year.
Right.
A little bit more because I feel like, I mean, granted, maybe they still make more money in the summer, even if they're not the huge tent poles that they used to be. They probably make more money in the summer, but there's got to be, I mean, Hollywood doesn't really do anything if money isn't involved most of the time, so up until Oscar season. Right. But I do think, you know, Pacific Rim, I think it performed better than the more recent polls had it showing, or the ideas that, the projections, there we go, that's the word I'm looking for, that were originally out there were really high, and then just before the movie came out, they dropped, and people thought it was going to be a total flop. And then it kind of did a little bit better than those projections, but it definitely didn't do as well as I think was initially expected.
It's saying, I just found an article that was published 13 hours ago on the Chicago Tribune.
Okay.
And they're saying that the possibility for a sequel is really going to hinge on the performance of the film in China.
Yeah.
Because in domestic, it made about 100 million, but it cost 84 million to make.
Yeah.
Right. But it's made 140 million abroad so far. And so I think they need to make 50 million in China to make a sequel, you know, worthwhile, awesome. I guess, for Hollywood.
I honestly, I'd prefer a prequel to this movie.
Yeah, that would be actually really good. I would.
Because I feel like, see that. Yeah, further exploring the early stages of the war and like the development of the Jaeger program. Stuff like that would be a lot more interesting than, oh, crap, we collapsed the throat, but now it's back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely did better than a lot of movies this summer, and I was talking about this with a couple of people. I think it had a very poor marketing strategy.
That's true.
Because Pacific Rim really seemed, the marketing catered to the built-in audience for it, which is it catered to people who were really into kaiju films or who were kind of fanboys.
I forget what I saw a trailer for it in front of, but I saw it and I thought it looked really stupid. Like, I didn't want to see it based on the trailer.
And I'll be honest, I'm not a big monster movie type person. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but I just can't quite get into them. And so for me, when they, all of their marketing, like they sent, I know IO9 had posted an article about this, but they'd sent kaiju organs and body parts
to them, which
is really cool. But for anybody who doesn't read IO9, which is a very specific audience, that's not going to reach anybody, you know? And they didn't, if they'd focused more on the story and they'd focused more on some of the characters in some of the marketing, like if they'd really put Mako kind of front and center, or even Raleigh front and center as being like, when, like they do in the front of the movie, they talk about how these pilots are like rock stars.
Yeah.
That's a really cool concept because it harkens the way back to NASA, like early NASA days. It harkens back to the Apollo program. I think that's a great idea to
it also latch would have been super easy to make an ad campaign based on that.
Yeah. That would have been really cool.
Like suddenly, oh, there's these new celebrities that are also fictional.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been pretty great.
It would have been pretty good. And I think they could have just done
They're sort of doing that with Catching Fire.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I can appreciate.
Oh, they're doing such good stuff with that, though. I'm on Instagram, and I follow Capital Couture, so I can see, like, all the costumes and pictures early. Like, they know, like, and when you're reading the books, too, it's very clear that she knows that she's writing for young women that care about things like outfits, that's why they're so, like, extensively described, like, I think that the film people have done a really good job tapping into that as well. But, Pacific Rim, I had no idea, like, I'd heard about a Guillermo del Toro monster movie, like,
right?
Months
Which is
and
also
and ago.
Like an instant
And I was excited about
thing.
It, but like no one else was. Everyone else thought it sounded super dumb. And so then I felt vindicated when everyone liked it.
Yeah, all of my friends were excited about it because they were all boys. But like
Yeah. But I was going to make the argument, but you can't really, like, with the failure of RIPD 2, like, I really wanted it to be a situation where it was, like, original content trumps, like, you know, the revamping
yeah.
of Superman, the revamping of the Lone Ranger, like, tired material getting a second wind. But you can't exactly argue that.
Yeah, but it is kind of interesting because I think the marketing for this movie was kind of off. Although, I think they made more of a push with the marketing with this movie to reach that niche audience.
Mm-hmm.
And more so than, I mean...
Not the Nietzsche audience,
Not the
though.
Niche, not the Nietzsche. Man of
the
Steel...
The Nietzsche audience.
They're all too busy staring into the void.
Uh-huh. Man of
the
Steel...
The void is the only show.
I mean, After Earth didn't really make much of a push at all. I feel
oh
like
my god, no. But, like, After Earth, I was in New York City when it was released. I was visiting my sister-in-law, and all along the subway, there were these huge, terrifying... posters with Will and Jaden Smith's faces next to each other just looking weirdly identical.
Yeah.
And it was horrifying.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Like there was an excess of marketing, I think, in certain ways.
Yeah.
And so, like, it just made me not want to watch it at all. Part of me wonders if, with Pacific Rim going after the niche market or whatever, the IO9 fan people, of which we number, I wonder if it has to do with the fact that, like, in today's oversaturation where, like, everyone watches every, like, you know, like, if you're going to watch a preview, you, like, look it up on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You avoid
yeah.
commercials like the plague on TV. Like, how much are things, like, even getting out? Like, I have an ad blocker on my computer. I don't even
yeah.
see ads anymore.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually an interesting point, because I wonder if this is kind of going to be the new... I mean, maybe I was kind of down on the marketing, but maybe this is something that is just going to be the new norm for marketing of movies, because you're going to have to reach out to specific markets. Not that there are movies that don't have a broad appeal.
Right.
And those will probably be marketed to everyone, but when you have a movie like this, you just kind of have to aim for one market and hope you make enough money to make it again. That's actually
true,
an interesting point, because there is a lot of oversaturation. There's so many more movies released. I have a couple of friends who've talked about how it's the same old thing, which I think happens with every generation, where somebody was like, where's our Hemingway? Where's our Gertrude Stein? And I was like, well, not like that, but I mean, like, it's kind of like those are all things that you look back in hindsight
yeah.
and realize it's very, very rarely is somebody appreciated for what they're doing, not just while they're alive, but even in the moment that they're
right.
doing it. It takes time to show whether or not something is staying
yeah,
power.
Something's not a classic if it hasn't survived already. Like.
But on top of that, there's a more of an oversaturation in terms of books as well. So many more books are released. It is easy for a really good book to get lost in the crowd, I think,
yeah.
as opposed to, you know, 40, even 20 years ago. You look at the publishing market then, it was very different. And now you have
mm-hmm.
e-books, and now you have people reading them on Kindles, and they can get them at an instant. They can just keep reading and reading and reading.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, what we're seeing is the future of advertising is this integration stuff that drives me insane.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I watch a lot of ESPN, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And during the Man of Steel push, it was so annoying, because they had these integrated ads where they'd be talking about athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, a Man of Steel clip would occur, and it's like, today's Man of Steel.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Or, like, when you're at a baseball game,
those,
and they're, like,
yeah.
the Home Depot tool race, or the Coors cold hit of the game.
Right? This is a thing
you know,
I
like,
used to hate about radio, like, when I was still listening to FM radio, was that, you know, they would just have the DJs say things like this that were so unnatural and so stilted. But now it's happening in TV shows because they can't get
yeah.
people to watch ads because it's all on demand.
Yeah.
And, like, so, you know, on Bones, there's always, like, they're selling whatever car they're driving. And on Warehouse 13, they're selling the car by name and talking about it's, like, ridiculous,
yeah.
you know.
Psych was like that,
navigation
too. Yeah.
system. Exactly. Like, there's all this product placement. That's
I always
not
think
even,
of
like,
that episode of Alias where she was driving the Ford F-150.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Like,
which is the least Sydney
such...
car ever.
Right. Like,
and I was like, how is this happening
yeah.
in a spy show?
Yeah,
and it, just,
right?
it cracked me up, too, because, like, the Ford people had to be like, this this is who we're going to reach out to, the girls who really like colored wigs.
like
that's actually really funny. It's so I like the irritating. Idea that that's the niche market they're going right. to. Well, so why don't we wrap up? I think that that's a pretty good note to end on. Why don't we wrap up the podcast here?
Gosh, we hate ads. Well, but we wish there had been more of them. For this movie.
I think that, like, the thing is, like, we're seeing them become increasingly refined.
Yeah.
Like, in some ways, like, you know, like, the ads that, like, the other day I was totally spellbound by, like, I think it was a Little Caesars ad mm-hmm. in which a guy is reaching for a $5 bill from his pocket and, like,
oh, friends. Yeah.
He has, like, a cast and just, and I was just like, this is so horrific. Like, it's so weird. Like, I like the movement awesome. Towards weird advertising yeah. and to hold my attention by being so bizarre.
Yeah.
But, like, I think it is becoming more refined, and I'm hopeful that, like, we'll move past, like, the ESPN bullshit that I hate and yeah. towards, like, ads that are, like, interesting and hold your attention. Right. Like, if you put so much effort into a film, like, if you're, like, Guillermo del Toro and it really is, like, whatever it is, a wacky work of art,
yeah.
like, you know, like, take a little bit of that and think about how you can place it, because, like, that's
right.
the
how do you
thing.
Sell
like,
that to people? How do you tell people
these huge marketing machines
this?
Are so divorced from the creative forces behind the film.
Yeah.
You know, like, I often don't feel like I'm getting, like, that organ thing sounds awesome, but, yeah. like, I don't think that, like, you know, like, in the mass market, we're seeing, like, the cleverness of the films reflected in the advertising.
No, I think that's very yeah. true. So, we're actually going to wrap it up here. We'll end on that note. And we hope you'll join us again very, very soon in the Jungle of Death. Be careful. Don't let your treads get stuck in the in the mud on your way out.
That's how people get in here on half tracks.
On half tracks. That's exactly how it is. I always think of Wally. That's what I do. all right. So we will see you guys soon. Bye.
Bye.